Our weekly chat with 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins. Brad joining us on Tuesdays around 7:25 every Tuesday as part of the morning show during the legislative sessions, which are moving right along. They're actually almost a month in, and of course it's a short session this year. I want to talk today with Brad largely about emergency powers the governor has and how these are looking to be reformed by both parties in both chambers, actually. And we'll see where Brad is at on that, I guess, and also talk about one of the ways that he was involved rather directly this last Friday. Also, we'll talk about where the process is at as, again, we start to head down to the middle stretch of the legislative sessions. And Brad, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris. Good morning and good to be with you.
So we'll talk about where the legislative process is, I guess, at here in just a second. But one of the big kind of emerging topics right now that we wanted to talk with you about, and also something, again, as I referenced, you were involved with and are involved with directly last Friday in particular, is the reform of the governor's emergency powers. And this seems to be catching some favor from both sides of the aisle, actually. We have a Democratic governor, of course, in office right now. So you would guess that would slow the Dems from wanting to actually, you know, reduce his emergency powers. But there's a lot of folks on both sides, again, as I mentioned, that are not too happy about this. So tell us about what the process has been like so far, some of the proposals, and the one you were involved with last Friday.
Well, it has been an interesting process. And I think you're right, Chris. The process was slowed down considerably over the past, 12 months, but things are really starting to heat up now with emergency powers reform. It's a major priority for Senate Republicans. It's been almost 2 years now since the governor declared an emergency for the COVID pandemic. And as you know, the COVID pandemic is very serious. And initially, it was very much a state of emergency, but it's not, in my opinion, the same level of an emergency as floods, mudslides, wildfires, earthquakes, and things like that, that our state law, our Emergency Powers Act, was designed for. But what the authorization allows the governor to do is, once he declares a state of emergency, he's able to issue these statewide mandates and other orders. And there's really not a lot of checks and balances in our system to undo that or push back against it. And that's what I think people are really starting to, you know, get frustrated about. And the bill that we heard before committee was Senate Bill 5909. It was actually sponsored by a Democratic member of the Senate. And as you mentioned, I serve on the State Government and Elections Committee. So I was one of the five members of the legislature that heard this bill. And the bill would authorize the majority and minority leaders of the Senate, and then also the Speaker of the House and the Minority Leader of the House, so four members but a bipartisan group of four, to terminate a state of emergency if it's been longer than 90 days, so long as all four of them, Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate, agreed to terminate. And there were almost 6,000 people that signed up in the virtual committee process wanting to testify.
Yeah, that's a pretty sturdy number for sure, Brad. Explain one thing to us, or clarify one thing for us, if you would, related to declaring a state of emergency, because it's a little different. It's not too much different from what I understand, but it maybe has its nuances that are different at certain levels, at the county level, at the state level, right, and then at the federal level. So a lot of people may be familiar with the process of, at the county level, for example, when we have a wildfire or a mudslide or something of that nature, during the winter storm that we had about a month ago now, the Chelan County Commissioners, for example, they declared a state of emergency that allowed them to fast track the process of bidding for critical services. They could just immediately spend that money, etc. So by some folks might be thinking that by keeping us in a state of emergency for almost 2 years now during the pandemic, that Governor Inslee is keeping some kind of a channel open for us to be able to receive federal funding. Is that the case? Is that one of the reasons we're still under a state of emergency?
Well, that was actually one of the potential criticisms of this bill. We had General Dougherty, who heads up our military department in the state of Washington, and he basically said, we do have some concerns with this bill, because if states of emergency were revoked by the legislature, then it could jeopardize some state funding down the federal funding down the road. And sometimes, you're right, the county governments issue those to not only be able to fast track some of the legal requirements for other measures to take action when there are emergent needs, but also to access federal funds down the road. But I promise you that the legislature would not abuse that. We would never undo a state of emergency and lose a bunch of federal funds. So I think there's a way to work around that. But basically what the governor's office has been doing has been, once he issued his state of emergency for COVID and kept it in place, that has allowed him to issue temporary orders, which have the same effects as state law, but on a temporary basis. But then he issues them kind of repeatedly, or he'll come up with a different variation of one or the other. We've seen that with vaccine mandates, mask mandates, and other things. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is, regardless of how one feels about the state's response to the COVID pandemics and whether state employees should get vaccinated and all these things, there is an important issue related to being a co-equal branch of government, the legislative branch and the executive branch, and having checks and balances in our system. You know, this COVID pandemic has put a lot of things to the test nationwide, and largely a lot of the governor's mandates in other states have been upheld by the courts. But the legislative branches in some of these states, in particular Washington State, that has a legislature that only meets for part of the year, the legislature, which is representative of every voter in the state of Washington, has largely been shut out from the process. And I think you're starting to see now, and I don't know if this bill will make it out or if a different bill, but you're starting to see now both Republicans and Democrats standing up. Initially, it was just the Republicans in the House and the Senate, largely from Central and Eastern Washington, but you're now seeing Democrats from Western Washington. And perhaps the elections play a part of that too, because a lot of these members are up for election soon. It's the big midterm with President Biden. I think people are starting to sense a backlash and a Republican wave and things like that. So I don't want to get too much into like the politics, but I think the checks and balances argument of our system and having co-equal branches of government, you know, that's a big deal, and it should not be too one-sided. Now, unfortunately, the challenge with any of these emergency power reform bills is that in order for those bills to take effect, guess who has to sign the bill? Governor Inslee, right. And he's not too keen on that. So it may just be, well, we're teeing up some of these things, and we'll be able to make some more substantial emergency reforms to laws to the Emergency Powers Act once Governor Inslee transitions to his next opportunity. Until then, everything kind of has to go through him. And I honestly think he's kind of enjoying it.
Well, there's a lot of pundits out there, I guess, Brad, who feel that government is treating, I mean, we just got this remark actually from Representative Steele on Friday last, as I recall, a lot of folks feeling like government is treating the citizens of Washington State, at least, if not in general throughout the nation, as though they're somewhat, you know, stuporous, I guess, that they really don't know any better, and that government needs to step in and kind of tell them or direct them what the best course of action in all cases or a lot of cases is, and that people are tiring of that. I personally think term limits might be a great idea myself, because I know, having done journalism and interviewing people, politicians, for example, representatives, folks like that, for over 20 years who've been in office for several terms, there is a change that I've seen, not in all of them, but in some, from, you know, really, quite frankly, you know, highly engaged and very interested at the ground level as a citizen, to really almost an automaton in some ways of government. And so there are a lot of concerns about just, I guess, the human quotient within the process that we've called government for so long. And it's hard to take those things to task. So let me ask you this, Brad, on the backside of this deal with the governor's emergency powers potentially being curtailed with legislation, and then he has to sign off on them. Shouldn't someone then be looking at maybe his pen power, with his veto power? Do we have to get in and amend that potentially?
Well, we've had some questions about that too. Now, that's a constitutional issue, not a state law issue, so there's an even higher threshold with that. But when the governor, if you recall, I think Coho reported on it, when the governor got pretty aggressive with some of his vetoes from last legislative session. The legislature, Republicans and Democrats, sued and actually prevailed against Governor Inslee on that. And I'm not trying to make it too much a political thing. There are Republican governors in other states, Florida and others, that people strongly disagree with, that say that this person is abusing his power. But I guess, broadly speaking, I'm not really a fan of executive actions, whether it's state level, Republicans or Democrats, whether it's federal level, whether it's President Obama or President Trump. I am more of a supporter, and granted, I'm probably biased because I'm part of the legislative branch, but I'm more of a supporter of the legislative actions, the federal congressional actions, even though they take longer. They tend to be more representative of the give and take of where our state or country is on some of these issues, rather than just one person, you know, taking an action. But that is our system of government. We also have the judicial branch as our third branch of government, supposed to be co-equal branches. And I've argued that the state Supreme Court has been sort of overstepping some things and being a super branch of government. So it's just really an interesting dynamic when you step back and look at what's happening in our state and others, just the tug and the pull and the twists and the turns of these branches of government. It's kind of fascinating. And really, for the young students out there learning their civic, you know, studying civics and learning about the branches of government, there's no better time to study what's happening than right now.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brad. We live in interesting times. There's not too many generations that can't say that in their own way, but the pandemic has definitely brought a number of things to the surface for us to think about that we're sort of retracing our steps over. Again, 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins with us today here on the Coho Morning Show. Brad with us on Tuesdays every week throughout the legislative sessions. Brad, I got to run, so we'll look forward to chatting with you next week. Until then, stay well, and again, we'll look forward to that next chat.
Sounds great, Chris. Thanks so much.